On Thursday, Great Barrington Public Theater in the Triplex Cinema in Great Barrington will screen Matthew Brown's film Freud's Last Session. The screening will be followed by a talkback with playwright and screenwriter Mark St. Germain. On the eve of the Second World War, two of the greatest minds of the 20th century, C.S. Lewis and Sigmund Freud, converge for their own personal battle over the existence of God. The film interweaves the lives of Freud and Lewis, past, present, and through fantasy, bursting from the confines of Freud's study on a dynamic journey. Mark St. Germain has written for film, television, the stage. His dozens of plays and musicals include The Best of Enemies, Dancing Lessons, and Becoming Dr. Ruth. His work has received the Lucille Lortel Award, the Outer Critics Circle Award, and the Off-Broadway Alliance Award. Freud's Last Session became Barrington Stage Company's longest-running play. It moved off-Broadway, where it played for 2 years, and now it is on the silver screen. It is a great pleasure to welcome our dear friend Mark St. Germain to the roundtable. Hello, sir.
Hello, Joe. Happy eclipse.
Yes, happy eclipse to you. It's very nice to have you with us. I feel like we've talked a lot about your work, but also Freud's Last Session, and when it was in its infancy and over the years. I'm curious as to at what point was there a signal made, and maybe you made the signal, that this is something that you would that was obvious for a film?
Well, I knew if it was going to be a film, it would have to move out of the room that they were discussing everything in. So the movie needed to be opened up a lot. But it seemed a natural thing to do because it takes place on the day that England entered World War II. So you have that going on. You have air raids. You have the life that Freud and Lewis had outside for the rest of their lives rather than a conversation. Freud's relationship with his daughter and Lewis's domestic relations. And so it seemed it could be opened up and made into a bigger story.
So let's step back. What brought you to the story in the first place?
I was at a lecture where they had a display of books, and one of the books was by Dr. Armin Nicolai. And on the cover, they just had a picture of Lewis and Freud. And I thought, why in the world are they in the same book? They really disagreed on virtually everything. So when I picked up the book and it was really about the disagreements that they had, I just thought it would be really dramatic to have them face off and talk about these issues rather than just they did not meet. They never did have this confrontation. There was a student who came to see Freud shortly before his death. This takes place really two weeks before Freud committed suicide, actually. And no one has identified that as C.S. Lewis, but the idea is that Freud, coming to the end of his life and having spent his life insistent that there is no God and that anyone who thought there was feeble-minded, all of a sudden realized this man, C.S. Lewis, had a big conversion experience, and he wrote about it, and Freud wants to see if he missed anything. So he summons Lewis to him, and that's the basis for the play and the movie.
Let's talk about the success of the play. As I mentioned, I mean, it was a huge hit at Barrington Stage Company, their longest-running play. Then it moved off-Broadway. It played there for 2 years. And I guess the simple question is, what do you think it is about this story that struck a chord?
I think because it's unusual in that it's really a play about ideas that people are interested in and want to talk about. And I think part of it was that it started a conversation that went on outside of the theater. And there were many people who came back to see it several times, really bringing people with them and arguing with them about it. So I think the fact that it was thought-provoking was what was the attraction. And it was a radical difference from a high-kicking musical. So people came to see it.
When you look at your work as a playwright versus your work as a screenwriter, you've done a lot of this work in the past. So is that enjoyable?
Well, it's almost in a different category of, it's a different beast. When you do a play, you have so much more control over it. You're involved in the casting, you're involved with picking a director, you're involved in the scenic elements, and you're there through the whole, at least I am, through the entire first production. With a movie, the director is king. And writers, it's a cliche, but I think it's a cliche because it's true. Writers are a necessary evil. And so when you do a screenplay, it's almost like you realize you're going to be passing it off to somebody else. So there'll be more than one person raising the child. And I found that to be true with movies.
The mystery writer Robert B. Parker described this to me one time and said you can be intimately involved in every aspect of the film and have your heart torn out of your body and stomped on, or you can just take the money and run.
Well, it would be nice if you could protect your heart somehow, but I think that's impossible. When you have a vision of how something should be done on stage, you have a closer chance to realizing that because you do have more hands-on control. With a movie, you're right. You hand it in, and if you can kind of steel yourself for whatever happens, then you're in a good position. And but I get emotionally involved. No matter what. It's a little hard to just take the money and run.
Yeah. You look at Anthony Hopkins playing Sigmund Freud, Matthew Good playing C.S. Lewis, and it's a hell of a cast. So you start with really, like, really good casting.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Anthony Hopkins, the movie would not have been made. There had been attempts to make it with other actors, and that did not work out. Once Hopkins picked up the script and said he wanted to do it, that put it on a fast track.
So this goes back to the ripping your heart out question, but what? How much time did you spend time on set? Did you spend time in the process?
No, I was on the phone with the director virtually every day at the very beginning. And this was a really long process. I mean, it took at least 5 years, I think, to go from the director picking up the script to the movie being made. I really did not want to be in the way. And I went to the set one day and I figured that was enough. And I don't know if you've been on a movie set, but molasses is fast compared to the pace of a movie set. And you stand there and you watch a scene being filmed. I watched a scene where people were going into a church and it had to be filmed 20 times. And I could see no difference at all from one take to the other. It was just something was wrong and they had to do it again and again and again. So there's not a lot of excitement to it. And even if you're watching an exciting part of the film being done, you're watching it half a dozen or a dozen times. So there's no spontaneity, it doesn't seem, in the process.
And the church...
So one day was enough for me.
Yeah, and the church scene entrance may be on screen for 10 seconds.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
What kind of conversations did you have initially with the director, Matthew Brown, in talking about it, and do you you can answer this however you want, Mark. I don't cause any bad feelings, but I mean, did you feel heard?
At times, not all the time. I think he had a very definite picture in his mind of the movie he wanted to make. And he was very concerned about keeping the movie going. And I understand that. I understand you want the pace to be an accelerated pace. He was very nervous about spending too long in the room with the two men. And I was not as concerned with that because with the actors we had and the conversation, I could have spent 2 hours straight with them in the room. But we had to keep it moving. We had to keep the story open and being told. So I wouldn't say we had any major disagreements, but there were disagreements, sure.
I think it's funny because your work is beautiful in the sense that it goes at a pretty good clip. You pack in a lot in 90 minutes.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. But I think it's just the film mentality that we're so used to car crashes and bullet-like intensity to all the films we watch. People are afraid to sit and watch people talking. They're afraid it's too static. And my feeling is that it lasted, 90 minutes on stage, and it held up. I'm not saying that you just do every film like My Dinner with Andre and,
right.
and put a camera up and watch a conversation. But I have a lot more. I have faith in the conversation and that people will be interested in that and the actors participating.
What was it like for you when you saw the finished product?
I was that's a good question, Joe. It took a while for it to sink in because I had seen some clips as it went along, but you really couldn't tell all that much from the clips. So when you saw it all come together, it was kind of sensory overload seeing it the first time. And so it was, first of all, when you actually sit there and think, well, this is Anthony Hopkins doing this, and this is Matthew Good, that takes you a while to get over. So once you're acclimated, then you had to get used to this story being told in a whole different way. And even though I wrote it, it was still a shock to see.
So on the event Thursday night, will you sit down and watch it again, or will you just have someone text you and say, we're ready for you now?
I don't know, Joe. I haven't decided yet. Whenever I'm involved with a play, I've never once sat and watched a play. I'm always in back pacing and listening and watching the audience. And that's probably what will happen this time. I never even could watch a television show that I wrote. I'd be walking in and out of the room, and I don't know whether it's nerves or I'm not sure, or panic. I have no idea what it is. So probably.
I mean, it seems like a very human. Excuse me. It seems like a very human emotion, though. I mean, think of how many people don't even want to hear their voice on an answering machine. You know, that it just, they hear their voice and they cringe. And sometimes watching your work or watching things that you have involvement with is really difficult. You just hope if people say they like it, that's great. And then you go home and make something else, right?
Right. Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, watching the audience, you can tell so much, and you can see people shuffling in their seats. You can see them reading a program or looking at their watch, and you're just hoping that they'll be focused on it.
Yeah.
And I did go to see it in New York at a screening, and I was lucky enough to be able to get in the back of the theater. So I stood a lot during the movie, but I had no room to pace. But it was It was good to be able to watch that the audience seemed caught up in it, and that gave me a lot of pleasure.
But you had the exits marked, right?
Oh, absolutely. I was buying exits.
But I think in a play of after giving so much to it and then sitting in a theater and watching how people react to it, that's just akin to being at your own funeral, isn't it? I can't imagine that.
That is a really good comparison, being at your own funeral.
Yeah.
Sometimes it definitely feels that way. But no, it is. It's just watching something that you created live on its own and beyond your influence anymore. So it's almost like watching a child grow up. You hope you did a good job as well as you could, and then they're really on their own.
Well, it's a wonderful opportunity for people to see the film and also to be able to ask you questions and also help out Great Barrington Public Theater and the Triplex in Great Barrington. The event is Thursday. You can find out more information by going to thetriplex.org, thetriplex.org, and it'll be followed by a talk back with Mark St. Germain. Mark, you're the best. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a beautiful event on Thursday, and I thank you for everything.
Thank you, Joe. Good to talk with you.
Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.